Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to a Monday night on our NASCA family podcast. NASCA stands for National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. This is Bailey Smith. It's my first night actually hosting a guest, so bear with me. We have a very special guest tonight, and her name is Jessica Avila. Jessica is from Dallas, was born in Dallas, and was raised between El Paso, Texas, and Juarez. Her mother, her biological mother, had left her before she was born because she was a drug addict. So she was raised between her biological mother had left her. She was raised between mother and stepfather, who was very strict but barely there. They had a lot of work. Basically, she had a very, very tough life. And unfortunately, we just got her bio like 2 minutes ago. So I am going to open up her mic and I'm going to give her some time to talk a little bit, but first I'm going to give out our phone number. We'd love to hear from our guests, our panelists, 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. And I am hosting with Linda Vitti, so I may have her help me out here. Jessica, I'm undoing your mic if you want to talk a little bit about your story. And then we'll have people ask some questions. Welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
We're so happy you filled in last minute.
Yeah, I'm thankful for the opportunity. I just wanted to quickly clarify. My mother raised me. My biological, my
okay.
only mother raised me. And she left my father a few months before I was born because of his drug addiction and their relationship problem. And I was raised between my mother and my stepfather.
Okay, go on.
So we were, I'm one of three. I'm the middle child. I'm the only female. And we were raised, like you said already, we were raised between El Paso and Juarez, Mexico, which is right, really close to El Paso. It's really close. And my mom was basically, when I was a little girl, she was, from what I can remember, she was just blah. There is no emotion. There is no activity between us that I can remember. I mean, I was also very young. And my dad was really strict. We were always like walking on eggshells when he came home. But when my mom was there alone, we did what we wanted. I mean, there was basically no supervision because she was in her own little world. she was very preoccupied with herself and less than the fact that she had her children to take care of. And I remember that we weren't allowed to go anywhere. We didn't really have friends as we grew up. And I say we because my little brother and I, it was just always just me and him. My older brother was always missing in action. He was always running away and getting into trouble. And we weren't allowed to stay anywhere. We weren't allowed to have friends. Nobody was able to spend the night. Everything was really strict and just between us. Until around 9, 10 years old that I realized what was going on. And my parents were having marital issues. I guess my mom found out that he was cheating on her. My stepdad was cheating on her. And they broke up. And I remember they broke up because we left. We went to Juarez and we stayed at some other guy's house for a while. And then we came back to our house in El Paso. And shortly after that, there was talk of moving up here to Seattle, Washington, where I'm at now. We moved, I guess, to save their marriage, and because work was better up here and the climate was much cooler, which it is. So I guess I can thank my parents for that because I moved out of here a couple of years before, but I could never stay out there because it's too hot. Anyways, we came up here to save their marriage and for a better chance at life, and things just got worse when we got here. My mom started meeting new people out here. She started getting more independent, and she made friends, and she was attracted to a relative of her friends. And really quickly, their relationship just fell apart, and my stepdad came back to Texas, to El Paso, with my little brother, and my mom and me stayed up here. And this guy that gave her the courage to stand up, I guess, he was also an my mom started changing a lot. I mean, she was already really distant with me. There is not a lot of emotional attachment or bond between my mom and I. And she started drinking and she started smoking marijuana with this guy. And really quick, they started dealing drugs out here. And I was left, like, on the back burner, per se. Like, she already didn't pay attention to me. And when she started hanging out with this guy, she started hanging around with a lot more people, so-called friends that drank and did drugs, a lot of partying, a lot of bar hopping, a lot of money was thrown around. There was a lot of drugs. And I didn't really have a childhood. My brother was taken away. The only disciplinary or strict, I don't know how to explain it, but I know the way my stepdad raised us was a little harsh, because I remember when we were in Texas and when he was at work, everything was whatever, right? We could do whatever we wanted, but when he was there, it was really strict. Like, we couldn't laugh. We couldn't talk at the table, or we'd get pinched. I learned how to spell because of him, because if I didn't spell, I remember house and mouse was the hardest words for me to learn. And if we didn't learn, he'd whoop us with a 4x4, or he'd whoop us with a belt, or he'd put me in front of a fan, butt naked on my knees with books on both of my hands, until I learned how to spell mouse and house. So he was really strict. And being a grown-up now, you know, after how I was raised with my mom on her own, I wish he would have taken me. Maybe something better would have come out of me, but I don't regret it, because I'm a mom. I'm a really good mom now. Anyways, so back to
I want to just pipe in here. When this is Bailey, I want to pipe in for 1 second. The way you're, the things that your stepdad did to you was abusive. You know that now, right?
I do.
Sorry.
I do.
Go
I,
on.
I know that now. No, no, I do. Yeah. I know that now. And I guess that's why my mom was scared of him, and that's why, you know, when he came home, everything just changed. And like literally when we were at the dinner table, my mom would make faces at us, so we'd get it, you know, we'd make noise or laugh and we'd get in trouble. I think that was like her payback, because I also remember times that there was times that, you know, we didn't listen to her, we got a little too rowdy, and she would play back in those days, there, you know, they had cassette players, and she'd play a cassette of my dad's voice. And he settled down for a minute until we realized he wasn't there. So my mom started dealing drugs with this guy. She started partying a lot. She started just coming out. Like, she has always been, she was always really beautiful, always dressed very provocative. But when she got into this relationship with this guy, she just came out more. And she looked really happy, even though, you know, everything she was doing was wrong. And I was just there. Like, there was nothing. I was just there. It got to the point where she wouldn't take me shopping when I needed something for like school utensils, school supplies and school, or when I needed clothes or something, because she'd have one of her dealer buddies' brothers take me to go shopping. She'd give them lots of money and they'd shop and they'd take me to Wild Waves and meet amusement parks, because with her boyfriend either getting high or dealing or partying. And I got to learn every year. My dad would send us up here. It really sucked, because I didn't have. Yes?
Your phone keeps going in and out. Are you on a speaker?
I'm sorry.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No.
'Cause it's going in and out, your phone.
Okay, I'm on a speakerphone, sorry.
Okay, well, maybe if you can go to a better area, because you're, like, fading in and out.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you, but it just, every now and then, you fade.
It goes, yeah, I'm on a cell phone, and I'm in my office.
Okay.
I'm in the bed.
Now we don't hear you.
I'm here. Hello?
Now we hear you.
Sorry, I lost my place.
I apologize.
That's okay. I don't know. Maybe you can ask me a question or something, because I got lost.
Okay,
I
will bring in Linda, who's my co-host here, who's been doing Monday night hosting, and now she's co-hosting with me. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Bailey. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so
Hello.
Much for sharing your story. I hear a lot, at the beginning of your childhood, there was a lot of secrecy where, you know, you had freedom when your dad wasn't home, but then he came home and everything changed. And then you went to a place where you're out on the town and you're getting things that you want maybe from your mom, but it's in such a dysfunctional environment that how hard was that for you, that change?
From when your dad was there to her changing and being a drug dealer and.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it was harder than when I had a father. A mother or a father, you know, I had no guidance, I had no discipline, I already had no emotional or physical support from my mom, you know, and then her turning around and, you know, then I was able to, I had friends when we moved up here, when we moved here to Seattle, they lasted a couple of months together, they worked for a family Mexican restaurant, and she started meeting people. I started making friends, and we were allowed to go to their house, and nobody really cared. And when my mom started doing her stuff, it just got even worse. Like, I didn't exist, and it was really hard because, you know, I'm so we moved here in 1990. I was born in 1980. You know, I was around what, 9, 10 years old. I was in elementary school. Well, what does an elementary kid know, right?
Sure.
What do we know? Or, you know, right. And I was just doing whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and I was left home a lot. I was alone a lot because my mom was dealing with her issues or drinking or getting high or, you know, I had nobody.
Right.
And that's the feeling I got from you. That's what I felt in my childhood. I remember saying to myself when I was 8 years old, I am completely alone in this world. And that's what I heard in your story. So I just wanted to share that with you. But I look forward to how you got through it and are coping with it now. So thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Thank you. I've always wanted to share with somebody other than the people that have been involved in my life, to use it as an example or to motivate other women or other families, people, children, because, I mean, it's not right and it's not fair to the children. I mean, yeah,
absolutely.
When we grow up, we're responsible for our decisions, but there was things that led me to what I did. I didn't know any better like I know now.
What?
I was
exactly.
9 years old,
exactly.
And I did not know that was not okay or that was okay, and it was not okay for me to see my mom with so many guys. It was not okay for me to see my mom dealing drugs and being with, you know, the guy that she met, it was her friend's brother-in-law. Well, her friend was sleeping with the brother-in-law. And my mom told this guy, she told him in front of me too, or she did everything in front of me, like there's nothing that was hidden from me. And that's what's messed up.
Sure.
She told the guy, hey, if you want to be with me, you got to tell your brother that you're sleeping with your sister-in-law. And so it was. And when the girl, when my mom's friend found out that she was, they were messing around, they got in a big fight, and there was a gun pulled out, you know. She could have got killed. The other lady could have gotten killed.
Goodness.
You know, I could have got it, but thank God nothing happened. And so while my dad took off with my brother, we were in hotels with this guy, and like I said, you know, there's alcohol and drugs here and there. We traveled for a little bit until they got their
Jessica,
things together.
Jessica, do you mind if I pause you here?
Go
and
ahead.
Let me
go
to the panel. Okay.
Go ahead.
Linda,
absolutely.
Do you want to stay open?
I'm done. I was letting her go. Good job, Bailey.
Okay. Here we have Mary Ellen. From New York. Hey, Mary Ellen, welcome.
Hello. Hope everyone's having a
How
good
are
evening.
You?
I'm well, and thank you for bringing your story to us. I'm happy to be here. Happy to support you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions or anything for Jessica?
Well, it just seems as though there was a lot of dysfunction in the family and a lot of scary events. So I support you through all you've had to go through. And I hope that life is better. And
I'm
happy to. I hope life is better for you.
It is. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary
Ellen. The rest of your story. You're welcome.
Thank you. We are going to go to Charlie.
Hello and good evening. You're doing a wonderful job with the time out. Jessica, my name's Charlie. I'm NASCA's Pennsylvania ambassador, and I'm blessed on Wednesday nights. I'm the host of that show. I want to applaud your willingness to come out here and be so transparent with the general public, not knowing who may or may not be listening. And I identify. My mother too was if I did something good, I got in trouble. If I did something bad, I got treated good, which really was messed up, right? But,
yeah.
But I applaud you for being out there and your transparency. I'm reading through your bio, and I can see the honesty that's in there. And I'm grateful that your seven children have a great mom. And that's awesome. And, I'll be keeping you in my prayers and your children as well. And I'm glad you're in a healthier environment today. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
And she agreed to do the show just yesterday. So the bio
wow.
that you're looking at is a quarter of her actual bio. So
right.
I just got it like half an hour ago.
That's
sorry,
okay.
Jessica, were you going to do something?
I was just going to say that that's one thing that about me is that I've never really cared what people think or say. You know, we all have a right, we all have a story, and I've been waiting a very, very long time to share my story.
Well, I feel honored to be here tonight on your panel, and I look forward to hearing more of what you have to share with us, Jessica. Just know that you have a family here at NASCA now. We all can be found on the website. Most of our phone numbers are out there, and you're not alone anymore. You have brothers and sisters who love you. I'm going to step off and let the next panelist come in.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Charlie. William, I think from Alabama. One second. Welcome, William. Welcome, William. Hello? Is that William or is it someone else? Hello? Welcome
I don't think
to the
William
show.
Is with us.
It was William. I talked to him, Bailey, but I guess he must have stepped away or something.
Okay, we'll get back to him. Okay, well, back to you, Jessica.
There was somebody.
Continue on with your story. No. It's fine.
Okay.
It was somebody that was already on. I didn't
okay.
mute them.
Yeah.
So you were at this point where your mom was with your brother, her brother-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. There's a lot of scary events, and had I known, like I would have organized it a little bit more. But I mean, it is what it is. It's how I remember it. You know, I'm getting a little older, so I might not have everything in straight order. But you know, it's as clear as it gets. And I have, you know, I've been waiting a very long time to share my story because I'm not the only one. And I need to get it out so that I could move on and I can also forgive everyone for me, not for them. But anyway, so, you know, that happened and they started dealing drugs, started making friends. Like she had friends, adult friends that she'd leave me with, and like female friends that she'd leave me with for like one time she went out to party, drink. I don't know what she went to do, and she left me at an Indian lady's house here up here in Seattle. And the lady took off with her, and they left me with a guy, and my mom didn't care. Well, that guy was caressing my hair all night, caressing my face, and talking to me all night. And my mom, I didn't tell her because either she was going to whoop my butt or she wasn't going to care. And that's how it was. She left me with another few other ladies when she would go out, and I ended up being friends with them. And when my mom would leave me with them, I'd get drunk with them. I'd go party with them, cruise with them. She'd leave me to stay the night with them. And one of the ladies I remember so clearly because her brother at night, he used to sleep with me and he would touch me. He never forced himself on me like sexually, but he, every night that I stayed there, he was touching me. And I never told my mom because
I was just worried that, you know, worried what was going to happen to him, or that she wouldn't believe me, or that I was going to get the whooping for her irresponsibility. And it came to a point. It got worse when we went back to Mexico. They were doing really good with their drug dealing. They got a lot of money. They had suitcases of money. I remember that well. One time they came to raid her apartment, and they didn't find the suitcases of money that were plain sight in the hallway. But they found a gun, and they found a couple of other things, and nothing. I remember the cops leaving. Nothing happened to my mom or that guy, her boyfriend, because she had an excuse for everything. But after that, we went down to Mexico to get one of her older brothers, and she smuggled him back into the United States, and they all three started dealing. And my mom would go out a lot. She'd go party, drinking, dancing a lot because, you know, that's where her most of her clients were. And she'd leave me a lot. Like I said, she'd leave me a lot with strange people. She'd leave me a lot with that guy or my uncle. Or sometimes they would go with her and I'd just be home alone or with, you know, the so-called babysitter friends that I drank with. And then everything just changed for the worse one night. Okay, that was a little loud. When they were having a party in her house, in her apartment, and there was a bunch of them, a bunch of guys. It was usually a bunch of guys, and just my mom. And I was, for her parties, I was always the one that had to turn up the music, turn it down, repeat the music, bring them beer. I hated going to restaurants. Oh, my goodness, I hated going to restaurants because as soon as she opened the beer, I knew we were going to be there for hours. And if I complained or made a face, I would get smacked or told to go in the car, and it would just be worse, and it would feel like an eternity. In the bars, too, I always had to wait in the car if I wasn't at home. I was with her in the car or waiting next to her. Anyway, so they're having the party, right? And I missed a lot of school when I was growing up because of the same thing, her party. Well, this time I didn't stay up. I didn't want to stay up. I don't know how I managed that, but I went to bed early to go to school. But in the morning I woke up because I felt a pressure on my chest. There was something on my chest. And when I woke up, it was her boyfriend with his thing, with his penis sticking out. And my pants were still up, and I struggled, and I pushed him off, and I ran out crying and yelled at my mom, "Your boyfriend's in the room with his thing out." And they all rushed into the room. Some of them were taking off their belts, and some of them were taking off their boots. And they beat the living daylights out of him. They had to call 911. I thought, you know, okay, maybe my mom is going to, you know, console me and talk to me, and we're going to have a closer relationship. Well, no, none of that happened. I don't remember any of that happening. I don't remember her hugging me and asking me, "What happened? How did you feel? Did he touch you? Did he?" None of that. And he was back in the house within 2 weeks because, according to him and her, nothing happened. Nothing happened. If that was me and that happened to my daughter, I would have killed him.
Me too.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to go a little bit off topic here. I have two daughters now. I have 7 kids, 5 boys and 2 girls. My first daughter, she's going to be 19. My other little girl, she's only 4. My older brother, and my mom told me that my older brother touched me inappropriately when I was a little girl, and she unraveled a whip, whooping his butt with it. And after he went to school and told school, they came in, instead of arresting her, they arrested him because he didn't tell the truth. Okay, well, my brother, when my daughter was about 15 years old, he came over to my house, and I don't get along with my brother because he's an alcoholic and a drug addict till this day.
Well, he came over unannounced, unwelcome to my house when I wasn't there, and my daughter opened the door. He groped her. And my daughter didn't tell me for a couple of months. And when she told me, I reported him to the cops, and I filed orders against him. And when I told my mom what had happened, she applauded me for doing that, for supporting my daughter and protecting my daughter. And the next day she turned around and said that I was the devil, that I was trying to ruin him and ruin her.
Sounds like your mom was a bipolar. I don't know.
No, she's a, now she's more than bipolar. Now she suffers from PTSD because in one of her drinking episodes about 12 years ago, she left where she was with her husband. The husband fell asleep. She wanted to keep drinking or partying or whatever, and she went out walking in Arizona in the middle of the night, and she was kidnapped and she was raped. So now not only is she bipolar or whatever it is that she was, but now she has PTSD. And she's mentally worse now. So I try to stay clear away from her. I try to stay clear away from my older brother because they are no good. No good news. God forgive me, but they are no good. Because look at everything that she put me through. She let this man back into our lives. It doesn't matter if he did or didn't. He tried to. Just the simple act of him going into my room, you know, that's more than enough. And she let him back in. Like nothing ever happened. Like my word, my worth was nothing to her, which it wasn't. Never has been. And that totally just screwed me up. It screwed me up, and I started running away. I actually consented to have sex with my friend, the babysitter, and she ended up being one of my best friends for a couple of years in that time. I ended up consenting to having sex with him. I lost my virginity to him, and what is that word when you're sleeping? What is it? Promiscuous? Or yeah,
okay.
Right. I started sleeping around.
Oh, okay.
I started sleeping around with anybody and everybody to get away from the house, to get, you know, have somewhere to stay, have somewhere to sleep, you know, because I didn't feel safe at home no more. And she knew this. My mom knew this because she sent the cops on me a couple of times to take me out of these guys or ladies' houses because she knew what was going on. But she got tired of it really quick. And since I was a minor, instead of talking to me, instead of taking me counseling, instead of hugging me and telling me, you know what, I'm going to stop all of this, I'm going to anything, just showing me any kind of remorse or care, she took me to the DSHS office in near downtown Seattle, and she left me there. She left me there. I remember my uncle begging her, Güera, please don't, because that's what they used to call her. Everybody used to call her Güera, which is blondie. Güera, don't leave her here. Take her, talk to her. She's your daughter. And she's like, no, I'm tired of her. I'm tired of her. I don't know what else to do. She never tried to do anything. You know, now that I'm a mother, I have two older boys. They're 24 and 23. They do not live with me because of how they choose to live their life. But shortly before I let them move in with their father, when they turned 15, he lived 2 hours away from me up in Everett. He moved down to Kent near me to help me with our boys. That's what he said. But he didn't help me. He just helped ruin them because when they were with me, I checked their phones. I knew who my kids were hanging around. I knew what my kids were doing. I was with my kids, on my kids all the time, being involved with them, talking to them, giving advice, yelling at them, but I was there. I was involved. And when they moved with their father, everything turned around because their father doesn't care. Oh, whatever. It's like, you know, some Mexicans, they're too strict or they just don't care. Well, this guy just doesn't care. And I did everything in my power when my kids went over there. When I found out that my kids were sexually active, when I found out my boys were doing drugs, I called 911. I broke into, well, not broke into his house because he gave me the permission to go into the house. So I would walk into their house, regardless if his wife liked it or not. Those are my kids. You're not doing anything. He's not doing anything. I would call the cops and I would take my kids out and I would follow my kids. So different from what my mother did. Anyway, she left me at DSHS, which isn't even the right place to take a child that you don't want. And nobody did anything. I was in the waiting room for hours till it got dark, like till it was closing time. And I just walked out. That's how easy it was back then. I just walked out. I walked so long that day. I walked so long and so much that day. I ended up getting to one of her friends' house and asking for to stay there because I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go, and I remember sleeping with different guys. Like, I remember sleeping with having sex with a guy in a van, in a white van. Like, oh my goodness.
The ones that can't even stay away from.
Exactly. You know, the ones that that I seen a couple of years or a year recently where they have locks, you know, and you're like, that's a pedophile van, right?
My kids see a van and a white van and they're like, right, when my boys see a white van, they're like, we got to stay away from that.
Yeah, well, I didn't,
it's horrible. Well, I want to just, I could relate a little bit, you know, to your story. I had a decent childhood, but I was a survivor of domestic violence. And I'm raising alone three boys. One is 22, one's 20, one's 16. And I've been raising them alone for the last almost 5 years, four years, let's say, three. And I was the same way with them. In the beginning, their father would see them sometimes. And then when I would be with them, it was like retraining them all over again because I was the consistent parent. And then, you know, their dad let them do whatever they wanted. So it was very hard once I had them fully to break that cycle, but I did get them into a lot of therapy. But it is tough. It is very hard. I mean, my 22-year-old is living at home now, and my 20-year-old is in New York, and my 16-year-old is here, and they need a dad, but he left them, and he can't come back. And you know, I'm going to go to Linda again, my co-host. Does she have anything to say before Linda? Before you talk. Let me just give out our number again. We want to hear from you guys, 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. Linda, take it away.
Hi, thanks, Jessica. I had a question. When your mom's boyfriend came in and sexually assaulted you, was that the first time that happened to you?
Yes.
Okay.
I described, you know, I would stay home. Either I'd stay home with my uncle or him, or I'd be in the car, or I'd be with my mom. Sometimes when I would wait in the car, when she was in the bars or the restaurants, because I got tired of waiting with her inside, there'd be guys like at the bars. They'd come out drunk and they'd knock at the window, but that's totally different than a guy actually,
yes.
on top of you. So. Yes, that was the first time that the first and the only time that he ever sexually tried to assault me, or whatever you call it.
How did you cope with that since your mother did not help at all?
How did I cope with it? I didn't know how to cope with it. I started being sexually active and rebellious. I started running away, drinking and smoking pot. I started rebelling because I didn't know better. I had no support. I had no aunts, sisters. There's no support system to teach me better or to tell me, hey, you know, don't do that, or I didn't know about no programs or resources to help me like I know now.
Right.
So it destroyed me.
You did the best you could with what you had, and that's exactly. All we all do. And so, you know, now you're here and you're helping other people, so that's just wonderful. So I look forward to hearing the rest of your story.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I want to apologize before I keep talking. I might go off on just different subjects, and that's what I was afraid of, because, you know, it's hard to stay on a subject when you remember stuff. But like you were mentioning, I have a lot of domestic violence after that as a mother, you know, with inconsistent fathers, with weekend fathers.
You can talk about all of that. You can talk about all of that.
Further along.
I'm just going to, there's someone new here.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. It's Lisa from, I think it's Washington. Lisa?
Ooh, is that Seattle or Washington, D.C.?
Yes. No. Outside of Everett.
Ooh.
Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks.
Did you have anything to say or ask Jessica?
No.
Okay. Were you just going to listen?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go back to Charlie.
Hello,
Charlie.
Hello, and thank you for having me back on. So, Jessica, one of the things that's jumping out in my mind to ask you is, where is your mother today?
She's in Arizona. She's constantly coming in and out of my life, but I keep pushing her out.
Okay, understood. So, my mother's in Virginia. And one of the things that may help you in dealing with that, I was wondering what you were going to tell me, what your relationship was with her. My mother, I treat her like a campfire. I keep her at a distance because she looks mm-hmm. warm and inviting, but I know if I get close, I'm going to get burnt.
Exactly.
So,
that's what I do.
You can identify with
that. That's exactly what I do, Charlie. I miss my mom. I need my mom. My kids, they ask for grandma, but, you know, I know how manipulative she is. I know she has her own mental issues, and like you said, like, The way we say in Spanish, de lejos mejor, from a distance is better. The further away, the better. But it's hard because, you know, she gets into my older kids' brains and she's messed with them so much. But, you know, there's only so much she can do. I just keep her away. As sad as that sounds.
No, it doesn't sound bad at all. That makes sense, actually. Some who don't understand that dynamic wouldn't be able to really identify, but I definitely identify. And again, your transparency, even you're being just truthful about yourself and your own story is just so powerful. And I think that there's probably someone, just if you're aware, we actually archive these shows. And I think that somewhere in the future, someone's going to listen to this and hear your honesty about even your own shortcomings. And that's going to empower somebody else to say, you know what? It's okay to be me, and it's okay to talk about what I've done, even if it's not something I'm embarrassed about. So, I give you a lot of credit, and thank you so much for doing what you're doing out here tonight. And I'm going to definitely keep all of your children in my prayers, but most it sounds like your two oldest might need a little more prayer, so I'll add them on my extra special list.
Thank you. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You,
they
Charlie.
Do need help.
And,
especially right now.
You're doing Bailey, you're doing a wonderful job on your very first show out here. Great job. And Linda, awesome job
Thanks.
Backing up. And I'm happy to be here with you. Thank you, ladies. I appreciate
Thank you.
Be blessed.
Thank you.
So before I go to Mary Ellen, I wanted to – I had a question, and now I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
let's go to Mary Ellen, and then we'll get back to me. Mary Ellen.
Hi. Jessica, I think you're doing a wonderful job tonight, and I hope you can tell that we're all here to support you. I was reading something earlier today, and just one little sentence just stuck in my head that I need to go grab the book and read it for you, and it says,
don't allow past decisions to affect your future. Mm-hmm. And that just came to me that I need to go get that and bring it in and say it to you. So I hope that that will help.
It does, and it's like Charlie said about being embarrassed. I used to be embarrassed. I used to be ashamed of my life and telling people. I wouldn't even talk about it. It was so embarrassing, and I'd break down as soon as somebody would judge me, but I'm not embarrassed anymore.
No.
Because I'm a mom, and I have to share my story to, you know, whether it's a good example or a bad example, but my story is going to help somebody, either to be or not to be like me. So, it's hard to not let my past control my future, because it does. It affects me tremendously. But I'm thankful that I'm fine. Thankful for Facebook. I'm thankful for COVID-19, because if it wasn't for all this stuff, we wouldn't be here right now. You see, I wouldn't be sharing my story, and I'm not embarrassed.
Yep.
So it is a little difficult to not let your past. Go ahead.
Mary Ellen, are you done?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So one thing I wanted to say, and this is from my personal experience and a lot of my girlfriends who had horrible situations, horrible divorces, is toxic, whether they're family, friends, kids, toxicity, you keep out of your life. I don't care if it's your mom, your dad, your brother. They're toxic to you. Goodbye. And that's very, very hard. It takes a lot of work to remove toxic from your life. It took my 22-year-old a lot of treatment to remove his dad from his life, because he loved his dad unconditionally. He wasn't a baby when his father went crazy. And, you know, he's doing way better than he ever could possibly be because of that. And I know that a lot of my friends have cut out family members that are still friends with their exes. So their family members are friends with their ex, and they're like, they're not a support system for me. I have to cut them out of my life. And that's just the way it is. If people are not there to support you, you don't need them in your life. And that's
Hello?
One of the ways. Yes.
Hello.
Did you not hear me?
Hello.
Yeah, we hear you. Hello,
Linda.
I think we lost connection with her. She'll call back in.
Okay,
maybe she'll call back in.
No, there she is. Okay.
Okay. I don't know how I lost you there, but...
Hi.
We back on?
We heard you.
Hello?
Do you hear us? Yeah, do you hear
okay.
us?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I can hear you.
I don't know what you heard what I was saying.
I got to hear where you were talking about your friends and having relationship with the toxic exes or family members, and
right.
I was just waiting to be able to say I identify with that tremendously, because and the children too, loving the son loving their fathers unconditionally. I identify mm-hmm. with all of that, and it makes everything so much more harder, because they don't listen to you, and they make you look like the bad one, because I'm pushing all the toxic out. Yes, I'm bipolar. I'm mental. I'm just trying to instigate or start problems, because I'm keeping the toxic out. And like with my boys, for example, their father is one of those Hispanic families that they let the kids run wild. They can be hopping on the cars all full of mocos, you know, boogers, and they don't care. That's that's how they'll be healthier and they'll learn. And I'm the total opposite. Well, now that my boys are older, he lets them drink. He lets them bring random women to the house. He lets them have guns and drugs in the house. And the stepmom and him don't do nothing. And they love him. You know, they're unconditionally. And they don't spend time with me. They don't talk to me. They hide from me because they know that I will not tolerate that kind of stuff. You know, my brother, I've shared a few stories about my brother. I keep him away. I keep my mother away. And I try to keep my mother away from my older boys because she's brainwashed them with money and stories, her own version of stories, instead of, you know, being honest and just staying away and staying out. And so I identify with you in keeping people out, regardless of who they are. Like with my boys right now, I don't want them near me because they're not living a life that I am okay with. You know, I don't like to sweep things under the rug. I don't like to know that I'm doing wrong and keep doing it. So if that's how they're going to live, just stay clear away from me. That's toxic.
Wow. Yes, that's amazing. And as far as you had said something before about, I don't remember exactly what it is, but that this goes with you, it doesn't leave you, or something to that effect. Like, well, anyway, my point was when you have a lot of trauma in your childhood and your life, even in your adult life, it never goes away fully. Even with the best help, there's always be something that's going to trigger you or take you back to that time. But you can get better and you can get healthier. And one of those things is keeping the toxic people out of your life. The other thing,
exactly,
obviously, is getting help, you know. And this is only from my own experience. I'm not a therapist. But from...
No, but it's true. It's true. It's true. You're right. I'm proof of that. I've gotten better with help. I didn't change. I didn't get better on my own. I had to push all this toxic out of my life. I had to ask for help because there are a lot of things that trigger me. So
yeah.
You're right.
And I'm going on 5 years, and I'm still here. We're still all healing. It's, I think, a lifetime of healing. But I think that it gets, as time goes on, it gets the pain and it gets less and less and less and less. So I've been told. So I'm waiting for that moment. But I think you're doing a great job, and it has to be really, really hard to have had to cut your boys out. That
it is very hard
very,
because
very
I was I struggled a lot, you know, as you can hear how I grew up, you know. I grew up in a lot of dysfunction. I grew up going through a lot of traumatizing events constantly. It was always something. I mean, it's still hard, and it's very hard for me to have to, you know, one of my boys, the one that's struggling the most right now, he calls me constantly, and he asks me, Mom, can I come visit you now? And I have to tell him, hey, Chuy, no. I don't know. You guys are out and, you know, out and about right now with this COVID-19. You guys are all partying and quinceañeras, drinking and doing all this stuff. I can't risk the rest of your brothers and sisters just because you want to come over here. And no, it's hard. It's really hard because they're me. That's a piece of me, and I have to say no. It is very hard, but if I don't do it, they're going to keep using and abusing me when they want to. And they're going to, when I need them or when I want to see them, I'm just going to be hanging there.
Right. Wow. There was something that in your bio that I was reading, and you had written that at 12 years old, you started driving.
Oh, yeah.
And you were drinking.
Yeah, so, yeah. So by that time, I was already, yep, I was sexually active. I was sleeping around, obviously, sexually active. I was drinking. I had smoked marijuana. I had smoked marijuana. I was experimenting, and I ended up going back to my mom's because things got rough for her with my uncle. My uncle started doing heroin. When he got here, he only smoked pot and cigarettes and drank. And when he started dealing with my mom, he got into heroin. She found out, and it got really bad. So she kicked him out. He went back to Mexico, and he introduced heroin to their little brother, who ended up overdosing from heroin. So, you know, I ended up, you know, going back with my mom because of that and you know, supporting her. I don't know how much at that point I could have been of support, but I was with her. And I was driving by then, and when we came back, I was the one driving her everywhere. I was driving her to the bars. I was driving her to deal. I was driving her to the restaurants with her friends. I was her little taxi driver. I wasn't going to school no more.
Wow.
And school didn't call to check up on you?
No. Well, I was surprisingly, I was really good at school. That was my getaway. That I did a really good job with my work, and I did what I had to, and I was gone. Because at that point, I was enjoying. I was liking it. As bad as it sounds, I was liking to be able. Everybody knew who my mom was, and the principal wouldn't bother my mom because my mom would chew them out. And yeah, I was in middle school, Evergreen Middle School in Burien, and I was driving myself to school. And nobody would mess with me because they knew that if, you know, my mom found out or they called my mom would chew them out. So I never really had any problems with school. I never had, I was good. The only thing that I had trouble with was math. I sucked at math. I hated math. But, you know, other than that, I never had no problems at school. You know, you want to hear something interesting? I just graduated this last month. I dropped out when I was 17. I got in a fight. I was pregnant with my first child, and I dropped out because of that fight.
Wow.
And I didn't finish high school. I was expelled. And I just, thanks to the online, everything's available online now because of this COVID virus crap going
right.
on. I was able to finish my high school, get my diploma. I just did that last
Yay,
month, and I'm expecting my diploma any day now.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Well, hopefully
and it's something
you'll
that
continue.
My mom. Yeah, it's something that my mom told me that I would never. She said, "You're always trying. You've been trying every other year with all these kids, and you never finish anything you start." Well, look at me now. I did it. It's something
Thanks.
Small, but it's an accomplishment that I did, even with my kids being home. I did that. And after that, I was able to get a job remotely from the comfort of my home. I'm a medical interpreter now. Look at that.
Wow.
By myself.
Wow.
And I still
That's
have a long
incredible.
Way to go. It is. And I'm talking to you guys now. I'm sharing my story finally at the last minute when I least expected it. I'm not ready. My story isn't, you know, you guys have what I wrote in just a matter of minutes. And I'm going,
okay.
you know, I'm veering off of the topics here and there, but
it's
this
fine.
Is my reality.
It's fine.
This is my story. And it's been really, really hard. Even right now for me to go back, I don't know where I left off and where I should
be going. I want to just tell you one thing. Every
mm-hmm.
single person on our panel or listening on Blog Talk Radio or anyone that will listen to this later on can relate to you in some way or another. That's why
I hope
we
so.
Are a family. Everybody, I'm telling you, I can relate to you. Linda can relate to you. Charlie can relate to you. I'm assuming Lisa can relate to you. Mary Ellen can relate to you. We all can relate to you in some way or another because we've been through something that you've been through. Some people more, some people less. And again,
mm-hmm.
people are listening out there live on Blog Talk Radio, Nesta, and they can relate to you. That's why they come to Nesta. And that's why we have the shows archived. There's
over 3,000 shows. And, you know, we all have different stories. You know, your story's all over the place. That's fine. But you're telling your story, you're sharing your story, and we all get it. You know, I always say, you walk the walk, you can't talk the talk. Nobody gets it unless you walk in your shoes in some way or another. They don't have empathy. And that's the thing about people who have gone through trauma or abuse. I can't understand child abuse, sexual abuse, but I am extremely empathetic because I went through domestic violence abuse and my children witnessed it. So that's child abuse. So I get it. We all get it. So wherever you're talking from, whatever part, wherever you are, but, you know, I was going to ask if you, we have about 30 minutes left. I was going to ask if you want to talk about when you got emancipated and got married at 16.
Well, so, hold on, let me get my mind straight. So through all that, you know, we came back, my uncle died, my mom got worse. She started blaming everybody for everything. I was blamed for being a little slut because that's what she called me. It was my fault. I was a slut. I was running around, and it was her boyfriend's fault that my uncles got into drugs and overdosed. It was everybody's fault, and she started shutting down. She started, you know, just shutting down and getting more into alcohol. She left him, and she just totally forgot about me. And I don't know how I bumped into my brother, and he was with my boyfriend at that time. My boyfriend was the guy that was caressing me in one of my stories that she left me with. I don't remember how I bumped into that guy, but them two were doing drugs together one day that I went over. And then I was pulled in. My brother told me, here, try it. Here, do a line. And I ended up doing it. And I ended up liking it. And I ended up staying with that guy who beat the crap out of me. A lot of times he would pistol whip me. He would hit me with the Nintendo cords when he was high because he wouldn't do it when he was sober. And I got tired of it. I got so tired of it when we were at a quinceañera one time. He was being really embarrassing because he was very intoxicated and he was flirting with other girls. And I walked out of the quinceañera. I walked out of the quinceañera with, you know, the intention of going home and taking my stuff. And I don't know where I was going because I didn't have anybody. I still don't have anybody but my children and my little brother and my stepdad. Funny story, he is still in my life. He does not abuse me anymore. He's very different than what I remember, and he's more involved in my life than my mom ever has been. Anyway, so I leave the quinceañera with the intent to go elsewhere, to leave this guy because I'm sick and tired of him. I didn't know I was pregnant by him at the time. I was pregnant by him. I'm walking down the street, and I seen one of the guys that I didn't mention because I was going off. I went off topic. But when I was still in elementary school, when my stepdad was still here before they separated, they were having issues, and they were letting me and my brother go outside to play, and we were going out to stores stealing. I know that's bad, but it was funny because he didn't find out, and when he found out, we got a whooping, and we never did it again. And we were allowed to have friends and go outside and play and go to parks. And one time I went with one of my little girlfriends to do homework. She fell asleep, and I was still doing my homework. And then one of her brothers came in and was talking to her, but she was asleep. And then he leaned over the bed and he saw me, and next thing I knew, he was kissing me. Okay, well, fast forward to, you know, all that stuff. I'm walking out this quinceañera, and I'm walking down the street, you know, trying to get to where we lived at the time, where I lived with this guy. And that guy that kissed me at my friend's house when I was in elementary school was sitting on the hood of his car. And he asked me, he's like, what's wrong? Do you need a ride? You know, can I help you? And I said, yeah, just take me out of here. My boyfriend is being ridiculous, and I need to get out of here. I need to get my stuff and I need to go. And he's like, where do you want to go? And I told him my mom's, but then I said, wherever you want to take me. And he took me up to Everett, to his, to his brother's house. His brother was in Mexico, and that's where I made love for the first time with him. And I didn't know I was pregnant. Like I said, I ended up having a miscarriage, my first miscarriage. When I was with him, we were going down to California. I lost the pregnancy in a rest stop. It was very painful. My goodness, it was so painful. And it was just me and him. And a couple of months later, he was a really good guy, a very good guy, very attentive to me. But he had 7 sisters that made it nearly impossible because they knew my mom, you know, because when I was in elementary school, remember, we all lived in the same place, and I used to be friends with his sister, and they knew who I was, they knew who my mom was, so they didn't like me. And we ended up getting pregnant. We ended up getting married because somebody threatened to accuse him of child molestation or rape because I was underage, and I ended up getting emancipated and then married to him. And his sisters got in, they interfered a lot in our relationship, and I didn't know what a man is supposed to be or how to appreciate a good man, and I found him boring after a while, and I ended up cheating on him with the guy I left, and I ended up getting pregnant by him. So I had one baby with so confusing now. I ended up having 2 kids, the one with the guy that was waiting outside, and then the second one with the guy at the quinceañera, who the guy that was caressing my hair when my mom left me with him while she went out and partied. How the world is so small and weird. And it was hard. Those couple of years were really hard because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. As a woman, I wasn't even a woman yet. You know, I was playing a woman, you know, I was a baby playing a woman's role with 2 kids and these 2 guys. And I didn't know. I was just going with the flow. And it was really hard because none of these guys were consistent in our lives. The guy that used to beat me up, the guy that I was pregnant by the first time that I had the second child with, he ended up being also he was a drug dealer, and he ended up getting shot in the head and deported. So he's never been involved in our son's life. And funny thing is that shortly after he was born, the father of my first actual birth, my first actual live child, took over. And ever since, till this day, he is the father of both of my older boys. Like, he took him in and he gave him his last name. He told me, hey, you know what, when he came to pick up our first son, he actually forgave me and told me, let's work it out. But I couldn't work it out. I just didn't want to be with him no more, especially with his sisters involved. And he's like, you know what, I want to take Chuy with me, because that's how I named him. I named him Jesus. And he's like, let me take Chuy. And I found it kind of awkward, but I let him take Chuy because I was back drinking again. I was really confused and struggling. And,
Wow.
I'm going to take a few minutes and let our panel talk again.
Yes, ma'am, please.
We have about 20 minutes left, and I'm going to give out our number again, 646-595-2118.
Yes, ma'am.
595-2118. Did lose a few people that were holding. There was a 929 number. I don't know who that was. And that other woman that didn't want to talk, I don't remember who that was. But anybody, please feel free to call in. Linda, I'm doing you.
Linda. Hi, Jessica. Oh, such an intense story. But I wanted to ask you, I know one of your boyfriends beat you a lot. Did you witness domestic violence growing up?
Yeah, my mom used to beat the crap out of me. And throughout her drinking episodes, sometimes she'd come home and start beating on me for no reason, or if I didn't turn the music up, or if I didn't bring her a beer. If we were in a restaurant and I talked back to her, she'd smack me. You know, she was always, not always, not constantly, but she'd beat me. I really didn't see my mom get beat up. I can't say that I ever seen my mom get beat up, because my mom was a very strong, just very strong character. She's always been very good at defending herself.
But you were used to, it was familiar to you to be beat. So
yes, it was.
Makes sense. Okay, well, thank you. I look forward to hearing the end of your story.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Now let's go back to Charlie. Charlie, you're back on.
All right. Well, thank you, Bailey. Jessica, I'm going to do this first of all. And that was a hand clap for you getting your education and doing what people didn't think you could be doing. Awesome job, young lady. Awesome job. I also want to encourage you again to go into, and I'm saying this because I feel like your older sons might need someone to talk to. And I want you to go into NASCA's website, and you'll find my phone number in there. You feel free to give your sons my phone number, and I'd be more than happy to talk to them, you know, to anything that they may need, okay? So, and I'm just offering that. You don't have to do it. I'm just putting it out there, all right?
Oh, no, I'd love to, and I will give it to him, but he's blinded. He's blinded right now. I put him in the Washington Youth Academy program. I called the cops on him every time I knew he was drinking and driving. When I knew he had drugs and alcohol, I called the cops on him, and I tried to get people to talk to him, but he runs from it because he's blinded by his I don't even know what to call it, his stupidity or ignorance or bad influences, the drugs, that lifestyle. But I mean,
I understand.
I will offer it to him.
I'm going to send you a Facebook friend request. I found your Facebook page. So I'm going to send you a Facebook. And so when you see that, you know it's me, all right? But you're doing an amazing, you're very welcome. I want to be able to help you with your sons, and I'm pretty sure I'm good at that. So I've done it in the past. But, again, amazing. Okay. You're just doing an amazing job, and great getting that diploma. What an amazing feeling that has to be. And something tells me you're going to go a little further with that too. But anyway, thank you so much for being here tonight. If I don't get a chance to get on before you leave the show, great job tonight. Great job raising your children. Don't be concerned about how your adult children are turning out, because they're making their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep
exactly.
focused on you, and I applaud you. And especially,
you
just got this last night, and you're out here tonight. Unbelievable. Great job. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Let's bring Mary Lynn back on.
Fun fact, my stepdad's name is Charlie.
Okay. You know, before we get to Mary Ellen, my ex-husband uses an alter personality name, okay, his entire life. It took me a long time to realize, probably when we were separated, that was his alter personality. I would never go out with anybody that has that name. Isn't that weird?
Charlie.
No, it's not Charlie. It's something else. I'm not going to say what it is.
Oh, okay.
But,
okay, no, that's fine, yeah.
No, I was just saying that I can never date anybody with that name. It would just, I don't know. It would just be very awkward. Anyway,
it's like
Mary Ellen.
Yeah, probably.
Mary Ellen, you're on.
Okay. Yes, Jessica, you're doing a wonderful job. And like they said earlier, we can all relate to different aspects at different levels. So I want you to know that your story will help somebody, probably many, many people. I actually am one of those that will sit back and listen to the archives for hours and listen to different speakers. So please know that not only us that are here tonight, but there will be many who will learn from what you have to share.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I could be here for hours too, but we only have 90 minutes.
I know. Great. That's why the archives are fun. You can do like, what are they called? Marathons.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Ellen. Okay, we're back to you, Jessica. I don't remember where you...
Just so much, and so much, you know, in such little time to share, but I think I'm going to leave the past, and I'm going to jump forward to the now. So like you guys already know, I have 7 kids. The first, oh my God, they were all different. They were all difficult. I ended up having, you know, my 17, she's 18 now, about to be 19. I started after I broke up with after I left the father, I guess you can say, of my older two. I went down south again. I went bad, and not literally down south. I just went down again, and I started stealing. I started stealing cars for a living. I started doing drugs, and I got caught. I went to jail. When I got out, I had nowhere to go, and I went to a party and with this guy who was, quote unquote, single, which ended up not being single because his wife found us, and we got in a physical altercation, and I had to leave, and the parties that I was in, it was a big house, it was a 2-story house, and the top was rented by this guy that I went to the party with, who was supposed to be single, and downstairs it was a bunch of Mexicans in a 2-bedroom apartment, and I had no other choice. It was really far from civilization, like an hour away, and I couldn't just walk out there. So I went downstairs and I asked them if they could, if I could borrow a phone, if I could stay there, and they let me stay there. That's where I met my daughter's father, who, Jesus, I have a bad magnetic attraction to violence and alcoholic people, because this guy was, besides an alcoholic, he was a light, how do you say, you know, where they, he got drunk with 6 beers. Lightweight, like low tolerance. That relationship went sour really quick because of that. When I was with him, I started working, and when we had our daughter, he would drive with our daughter when I was working. I used to work all the way in downtown Seattle at the Key Arena as a, what do you call those people when they play basketball and you serve them the beer?
Like a server.
I used to work for when the Sonics played. And he used to, and we lived all the way over here in Renton, and he had to take a floating bridge over the water to come and pick me up all the way in Seattle. And he would drive drunk all the way over there with my daughter, not in a car seat. And he crashed once with her in the car, and he just did a lot of really irresponsible things in his alcoholism. So that relationship didn't last long. And somehow I found my biological dad in that time, and I went and I found him. I went down to Mexico for a couple of years, and I got into some really bad things down there. My uncle almost killed me down there. I gave my daughter to my mom because I got into some really bad drug smuggling and usage, and I turned my daughter over to my mom. Because she was funny thing, she was with one of the guys that I lived with, the older guy at that house that I stayed at with my daughter's father. There was an older gentleman there. He ended up dying of Lou Gehrig's disease. He ended up being a really good friend of mine that I introduced to my mom. And when I was down in Mexico, I gave my daughter to my mom because they were better off then, and I trusted her.
And somehow I managed to get out of that situation and I came back up here. And I guess that's when reality hit me, because I wasn't supposed to be alive after all I went down. And that's a different, totally different story for another time. I ended up coming back and settling down a little bit, but this time by myself for a couple of years. I got to work, and when I least expected it, I ended up meeting my fourth and fifth son's father. And again, he was addicted to cocaine and an alcoholic, and that relationship didn't last. I left him because of all of those issues, and his ex-wife. She made our lives literally living hell. Since the moment she found out about us, she alienated the child that they had shared, and because of my existence. And I tried to help him. I tried to help the child. I tried to help him for the child, most importantly. But that was a nightmare, and I had to get out of that. And again, I was alone for a couple of years. I struggled alone with all my kids for about 3-4 years, and it was hard because of the father of my older two boys. It was a weekend dad, and then he moved over from Everett and to help me. And instead of helping me, he just helped mess my kids up. And you know how you explained how hard it is to have your kids a certain way, and then they go with a father, and they, you know, oh, everything's fine and dandy over there. We can jump on cars and jump out of windows and drink with my dad. And then you come home and they want to rebel and, you know, act like that over here, where it's more calm and not acceptable. I was going through that alone, a lot of that alone. After I left my last fourth and fifth child's dad, I had a relationship with somebody, but again, he was a very drug addict, and they had to zap him. He like totally died, and they zapped him back to life. We were working out, and he ended up passing out there when we were boxing. I was into boxing. I was trying to keep my mind distracted.
Do.
Yep.
That's what
and
I do.
He ended up
a kickbox.
Yeah, not kickboxing, just, you know, regular boxing, and that was really fun. I had all my kids in it with me. I try to involve my kids and do something they like, you know, because they were boys. And it was really hard because, you know, with technology, not a lot of things interested them, and that's one thing that they really liked. Anyways, this guy ended up being worse than all of them, and he scared the living daylights out of me. Like, oh my God, he traumatized me. And because he went back to it after they put a pacemaker in his chest, and he went back to it. And I had to, well, I didn't have to. God did it by himself. Like, he was busted on his way to work. He took me out of that. He took him away from me. And again, I was alone and struggling by myself, but you know, I found myself. And a few years after that, I found my husband now. And my husband now, he had a little, and I mean a little, because it was nothing compared to everybody else. He had a little addiction to drugs, and he had an alcohol problem, because he was here alone. He's been here for 16 years alone with no family to support or help him. And he's been the only one sending money to Mexico every 2 weeks. And I saw something in him that I saw in me. And he would push me away, and he never lifted a hand to me. He's never physically abused me. He would talk crap to me when he was drunk or high, and he'd push me away. But I seen what he was going through. I seen his solitude, and I stuck with him. And I would just
be there when he needed. And I think he saw the difference in me and all the other females that he was with. And he, after our first pregnancy, because we got pregnant, and I told him that I didn't want to struggle again with another child alone. It was already hard enough having five kids with an unstable dad, that if he wasn't going to be with me and help me with this child, then I wasn't going to have the pregnancy. I was only a month pregnant. And he didn't realize yet what he knows now. But at that time, he declined, and he said, no, just have the baby and I'll give you child support. I've never given any of my children up to their other fathers. I wasn't going to do it then. So I made the difficult decision, and I had an abortion. And I tried to move back with my mom in Phoenix. But within 2 weeks, I was back in Seattle because of her mental issues. And that's another story. I'm just going to say that she tried to use my daughter as an excuse to start crap with me because of her own insecurities. So that led me back to Seattle. And when my boyfriend at that time, he's my husband now, realized I was back, it's like somebody turned a switch on in him, and he stopped. He stopped drinking. He stopped doing drugs. We got married. We got pregnant. And he's done nothing but support me and help me so much like no other person, not my mother, not the father of my first kid ever did. Like, he's not perfect. You know, he still has his little defects. He keeps leaving the freaking gate open. And that really, really concerns me because I have a 2-year-old, an autistic son, and we live close to a main street, you know. But I mean, that's a defect that I can work with. So I'm just saying he's perfectly imperfect, and he's helped me find myself. He's helped me. He's giving me the time and the support to let go of the past and work with the future. And thanks to him, I am in a stable and a steady environment. We just bought our home, our first home. I've always used the system. Not, I'm sorry, this might sound wrong, but I've used the resources that are available to me as a single mother. Never been ashamed to use that because that's what it's for. And before I met him, I was on King County, their program, the housing authority. I had my own little government house. But when I met him, he's like, you know what? You need to get out of here. It's time to move on. You can't be here forever, and certainly not with a man. I want to get you a home. And we bought our house, our first house between both of us 2 years ago. We became first-time homeowners, and you know, we're not doing marvelous, grand, great, but we're doing better than we thought, than anybody wished that we could. And he's very good to my kids. I think I know.
We have 1 minute left, so
yes,
ma'am.
Yep.
We have about 1 minute.
No, that's fine. That's fine. If you want to jump into questions, I'm you know.
I'll put Linda on quickly. Sorry.
It's okay. No.
Linda, anything you want?
I just wanted to let you know you're doing an absolutely wonderful job. Everything you've been through and everything that you shared, it just is going to bless so many people. And, you know, it's going to be recorded, so if anybody wants to hear the whole thing, please check our website, NASCA.org. And also, on the website, there's phone numbers that you can reach out if you need people. But, Jessica, you did a wonderful job, and thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
it's
you.
Never too late. It don't matter how old and what you've gone through. It's never too late. Just keep going and keep trying.
Is. Yes. We have,
I didn't give up.
Okay. Charlie, want to say something quickly?
Absolutely. Jessica,
Charlie.
Awesome job tonight. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to hearing from you outside of the show tonight. Take care and be blessed. Stay encouraged.
Mary Ellen, you have a minute. Do you want to say something quickly?
Yes, I just want to say thank you and congratulations on your new home and your relationship. I'm glad you reached that point. I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful life forward. Marvelous is in the eye of the beholder, so don't worry about what someone else might think is marvelous.
Thank you, Jessica, for joining us on the show tonight. Thank you for all the panelists. And please visit our website, NASCA.org.